branding, experience, conversation, promotion, powerful marketing, empowering small business to change their status quo. It's the Internet Show, all about small business marketing. Jay Arrett hosts the brightest minds in marketing. Power, power to the power. Small business.
Hey there, and welcome to the Internet Show that helps small businesses put a jolt into their marketing. I am your humble host, Jay Arrett, a marketing consultant helping entrepreneurs become marketers. You can find my company website at themarketingspot.com. This is episode number 64 of The Big Show, and it's chapter 7 of The Marketers Roundtable. The Marketers Roundtable is where I invite a few of my marketing friends to talk shop, discuss current marketing issues. This particular roundtable has an Optimization Summit flavor. All guests are speakers at this week's Optimization Summit in Dallas. It's a great conference for marketers and entrepreneurs to learn about online marketing, social media, and branding. But this episode is not a preview of the summit. Each guest will bring a current issue they want to discuss at the Marketers Roundtable. I am one of the presenters at Optimization Summit this week, or more accurately, co-presenting. Eric Brown of The Urbane Way and I will present transformational branding. It's a discipline we've been discussing in detail for several months now. And this session is for businesses who are tired of the improvement game, where the race for constant improvement leads to marginal increases at best, and really just keeps you part of the commodity economy. If you're frustrated with that, transformational branding changes the game. And if you want information, go back to the archives. Eric and I talked transformational branding in episode number 62, and you can listen to that episode at the website powertothesmallbusiness.com. Now, next week on September 22nd is my next free webinar on how to spark word of mouth about your business. It's called Creating Conversation, Harnessing the Three-Headed Word-of-Mouth Messenger. Ooh, sounds deep, huh? My special guest is fellow marketer and author Bill Schley. You can get more details and register at themarketingspot.com. I'll also post a link in the show notes for this episode at powertothesmallbusiness.com. So what are some hot issues in marketing? My guests at the Marketers Roundtable are all speakers at this week's Optimization Summit, and I'll let them introduce themselves. Relax and pull up a seat to the Marketers Roundtable. And so now we go to the Skype line with our distinguished panel of guests, and let's go around the roundtable and let them introduce themselves. Ladies first. Erica Campbell. Hi, Erica.
Hi, thanks for having me. My name is Erica Campbell. I'm the Senior Manager of New Media Marketing with For Rent Media Solutions, and we are in the multifamily housing industry, and we publish For Rent Magazine and ForRent.com. And my primary responsibility is handling the business-to-consumer marketing and new media initiatives.
Thanks, Erica. Shashi Belamkonda.
Thank you very much for having me on the show, Jay. I'm Shashi Belamkonda. My official title is Social Media Swami at Network Solutions, and the unofficially it's Director of Social Media. Network Solutions, as you know, is a company that helps small businesses with online tools like e-commerce, hosting, everything else.
And our final panelist today is Scott Ellis. Scott, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jay. Good to be here. Yeah, my name is Scott Ellis. I am at vsellis.com. And my focus is primarily on taking the technical knowledge that I've gained over about 14 or 15 years in the business and trying to help educate non-techies.
All right, here we go. So let's dive into the topics. And first up is Shashi. Shashi, what's your topic for discussion today?
Interestingly, I wrote an article just that was published in the Washington Business Journal a couple of minutes ago. It's about using your office as a networking tool. And this was inspired by a local business called Speaker Box. So no relationship with us except their friends. They went into a new office, and then in their office, they actually built a couple of seats for people to come and co-work in their office. And it seems like that's a huge way of networking with people at the same time, letting people do their jobs whenever they need to do. So it's very interesting, and I wanted to see if there are any offline ideas that people are practicing that kind of matches with their online presence.
I think one of the things I've been doing, not specifically with my office, but is social media for events and making an effort to connect your online efforts and then get out there and actually meet some of those people in person. One of the, I think, biggest mistakes I see people making is pounding away at whatever social media outlets they're using and not really getting out there and making those personal connections that you really only get from getting face-to-face with people, whether it's through meetup groups or conferences and events, things like that.
Yeah, Shashi, I think you bring up an interesting point here. Is I'm a solopreneur. I know lots of people work from a home office, and I have a home office. I also have a satellite office in a local office building. But I work mostly from my home just because it's more convenient, and I get up in the morning, and then I just get slaving away behind the computer. But I think I found myself becoming a little disconnected with that strategy, even though I'm on the social media outlets a whole lot. So I see your point in that I've made an effort the last month and a half or so to say, you know what, I've got to get out of the office. I've got to meet some people face-to-face and get out in the community. Otherwise, I don't know, I feel like I move into this almost a state of malaise, even though I'm constantly talking to other people on social media. I think I'm missing out on that personal face-to-face contact by being trapped within my home office.
I mean, icons or avatars that people have on social media are mm-hmm. not your customers. The actual human beings behind them are your customers. So I think I see the point of both of you also that all these are tools to reach an actual human being and probably make them more efficient. I mean, you can efficiently reach more people using these tools, but you shouldn't forget the fact that you need to have face-to-face interaction sometime.
So my consumer is going to be the apartment renter, so mine's a little bit different. You know, I don't usually typically get to interface with a renter all that often, with the exception through the social media channels and outlets and things of that sort. So we use a lot of consumer promotions to really get a conversation started with them so that we can understand the voice of customer and their wants and needs. When it comes to a business-to-business standpoint, I think Scott hit it on, you know, nail on the head with live events. I think it's very important to not forget about those. And then when it comes to us, we're such a large operation with so many different employees nationwide with all of our satellite offices that taking in consideration Skype and different you know, media-based boards like that where we can all communicate is absolutely essential. And even just meeting, if we're doing a trade show, meeting a day or two in advance and getting all of the executives in town, it just makes for you know, stronger organization rather than doing everything just online.
Well, Shashi, your original question was based kind of on the networking aspect, right, of the open office strategy, and we've kind of turned it into getting face to face with people. But I think you're right in the networking. I think that's where I've noticed the impact in kind of staying isolated, is that my networking, although it's great networking with people online in the social networks, and I love doing that, you know, we can't forget, you know, that those face-to-face networking events and the people in your own community sometimes.
Exactly. I think also trying to, maybe one thing you should consider is having a networking event in your house where people who normally work from home come and, you know, spend an afternoon together doing both work and networking.
Shashi, that is a great idea, and I'm going to steal that, just so you know. But I will give you full credit.
Okay. And you have said it so many times, especially I think remember a podcast which you're a part of with Network Solutions, where don't forget traditional forms of marketing, networking for your business. They're still very important. In fact, I think your tip was you may get a better deal in the local newspapers now since not many people are advertising.
Mm-hmm.
So the same thing applies to see what your customers want. Do they want to interact with you both online and offline? So I think that's where you should spend equal amounts of your efforts with.
Okay, cool. Next up at the Marketers Roundtable is Scott Ellis. Scott, what's your topic for discussion?
Well, the topic that I've been tackling quite a bit with people lately and wanted to bring up here is of content and content organization and how you use that online. So I guess in a nutshell, my observation has been that, one, people tend to define the content that they work with online a little bit too narrowly, thinking only of their website typically, and two, they often don't spend enough time organizing and laying out their content before they build or rebuild their site. I'd certainly be interested to get the perspective of the other panelists that have probably built you know, more than one website for their businesses over time, but
you're right. I mean, people have, like, for example, I've always met restaurant owners who wanted business their websites, and the first thing they say is, we want Flash. Now, then I tell them, like, have you ever tried taking a menu in a flash menu and downloading it and printing it? So I've actually written an article where I was working in a restaurant, and the reason we started a website was because our fax machine broke. This was 90s, so when the fax machine broke, we just said, let's send them to this website and they can download the carryout menu and then call us. It became so efficient. So number one is, what do you want to achieve for your business, right? Number two is, when a person comes to your website, they don't have all the time to go through what you think is cool. So they should be able to conduct their business as quickly and as efficiently as possible. So laying out content, I think absolutely. In fact, if a web developer, most of them do, should go out and have a session with the owner to say, like, what do people do today and how I can make it more efficient by kind of whiteboarding and showing them the whole flow of content that's on the website.
Just this morning, as a matter of fact, I did a consultation with a lady who has an online business that's an extension of her offline business, and she wants more than 50% of her sales to come through her website, and yet I look at her website and it doesn't even look like a store. I mean, she's got a video with a song on the front page. And so my first thought was, she obviously did not set up this website to be a store. So probably when she first set up the website a couple of years ago, it wasn't intended to be, you know, the bulk of her sales, but now it is. And so now she's kind of trapped by her website. So yeah, she's really, I think, got to start from scratch, Scott, and I don't know, organize your content in a completely different way. It's definitely not organized to convert prospects into sales.
Yeah, I think you guys both hit it right on the head. It's, you know, think through the what you want to accomplish on your site. And it really behooves someone to spend quite a bit of time really thinking through all of the different types of content that are going to be on their site and how those things are going to impact what their goals are.
I agree. We actually do that here. And I look at it in five pieces, where you've got your communication piece, your connect, your collecting and organizing and categorizing of your content, your customization, and then your conversation. And those are like my five buckets. So when I look at communicate, how are you using, what tools are you using? Is it your blog, your website, your print? Connecting, where are you connecting? Social networks, maybe it's your mobile platforms, your billboard. How are you categorizing these? Are you using social bookmarking sites? And then when it comes to customization, are you using RSS or widgets or things like of that nature? And then when it comes to the conversation, are you using Q&A sites, or maybe it's surveys, whether it's traditional or online versions.
Scott, somewhere in your content you said, you know, what do you want your website to do? And I think that if people just ask themselves that one question, what's the most important thing I want my website to do? And then take that as the starting point and say, all right, everything I do with this website should be organized around that one thing that I want people to do when they come to my website.
Yeah, absolutely. Think about that call to action.
All right, we are moving on. So next up at the roundtable is Erica Campbell. Erica, what's your topic for discussion today?
I wanted to talk about promotions and sweepstakes and how contests are a great way for rewarding your consumer loyalty and helping to sustain their emotional and physical attachment to your actual brand. And specifically, I think social media-centric promotions, whether it be video or photo, really have the ultimate power to drive massive awareness and engagement with your fans. And I wanted to just kind of get everyone's opinions. And I know, Scott, you've got a photography background, kind of what your opinions are on photo and video and where you see that going for whether it's consumer loyalty programs or just, you know, engaging with them in these video-centric type contests to help facilitate deeper engagement with them.
Yeah, as far as photo and video go, I'm a big, big advocate of using both online to either promote your brand, sell your products, what have you. I think the advantage and the risk, if you will, with video is that the barriers to entry toward producing a reasonably good quality video are just a little bit higher than they are for doing something as simple as writing a blog post or publishing a picture. That being said, that really can play to your advantage if you're willing to dig in and do the work on it. And it doesn't have to be, you know, a television production quality commercial or anything like that. But, you know, putting a little extra effort into it to learn some of the nuances of getting video out there and using those things, I think, can really help differentiate your brand online from your competitors.
Erica, let me ask you a question, because this is interesting you bring this up, because I saw recently a contest that I might have liked to win, you know, win an iPad. Everybody wants to win an iPad right now. But the contest was create a video about why you love our product. Is this kind of what you're talking about?
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's another issue, too, is coming up with what exactly your contest should be and what the consumer need is, because that will help unfold, you know, how successful your contest is. But yes, there are some out there that are tell us why you love our brand.
Now, you said engage people with your brand. I can see this from both aspects. Like entering the contest, I immediately said, well, I'm not going to enter that contest because I would have to create a video. And while I can, it would take me a lot of time, and I'm not going to be as good as other people can be at creating a video. So I know that I'm not entering that contest.
Yeah.
But afterward, maybe I'll watch the videos from the contest, but I know that I won't be entering the contest. So what do you think about that? Which side of the engagement equation are you talking about?
Yeah, I think that you really do need to find out what's going to motivate your customers, and find out what their true need is or characteristic that they have, so that they can more they'll want to actually participate in it, and the barrier to entry will be lower. Another thing that's important to note is you probably want to have a variation of items so that it's, you know, if they're not submitting video, can they submit a photo? Or is there a secondary entry that where all they have to do is vote? So we have a lot of options like that, because I just think that, you know, if you're not getting the actual need or what's going to motivate them to enter, then they're not going to have the interest.
Just to go back to the first question on video and photos, the advantage of posting them is all the multiplicity of places where you can post to reach new audiences on the internet. Like I've seen people start writing blog posts on Scribd. And the same way for photos, like if you put your photos on Flickr, it reaches a different audience. And at the same time, you can use the photo on your website embedded. So there is a connection there. So I would say if you're going to upload a picture onto your website or a property, make sure that you can post it on other places also and use it commonly together. I think you increase your audience a lot that way. It's not going to gain, I mean, it's not going to say gain you a lot, but at least the chance that somebody else will, a new customer will discover it is there.
So, Erica, I'm curious, have you done any of these contests or have you seen them work? Do you have an example of how it has worked real well?
Yeah, we've done two video contests. The first one we did was in 2008, and it was just our first kind of contest in social media, video-centric. We partnered up with a team to help us out, and we had a pretty good response rate. We noticed afterwards, after 2 years of doing video, photo seemed to be the better route because we got more inventory. So the first video contest we did, we got about 50 submissions. The second time, we got 120. So we definitely increased, and we saw a huge success with unique visits. But I think that some of these smaller, the time frames are shorter on them, and they're more the photo-centric route. We've received a higher increase in fan followers and just kind of the word of mouth and the viral. But then with the video, we did target some really cool, we targeted colleges and film schools out, kind of the amateurs, and we got some solid video content that, you know, we could run 30 and 60 second spots with. But again, I think it depends on what your goals and objectives are. And what we are seeing is that these shorter contests that are more of like the sweepstakes and the photo route, they seem to pick up a little bit quicker.
With people having so much of things to do during their day, if they can do something by just clicking a button, I think they'll do it much faster than asking them to fill up something. Is that your point, Erica?
Yeah. We usually have a grand prize, which is the ultimate, you know, submission, whether it be the photo or the actual video. And then we've got a secondary prize where all they have to do is click a button and vote. That kind of helps with our seeding of the contest, getting the word out, and it gives them, again, an opportunity to communicate with their friends and families, get them involved in the voting process, and there's usually a prize awarded for that. So I think it's important to have a secondary section for that.
Yeah, you got to balance out, right, which is kind of what we're talking about here. You still need to have something interesting happening within the contest. So if a contest is just about clicking a button, then you're not going to get many interesting photos or videos or whatever you're trying to do. So if you have that front end and back end of the contest where you do create that interesting video or those cool pictures, those cool photos, then people can vote on them. So you need that engaging content, but at the same time, you need people to participate too.
Absolutely. And I think the follow-up with these promotions is important too and crucial, and seeing where they've what they've done with their prize money afterwards, or if you've sent them on a trip, how do they, you know, can you document that? I think that that kind of extends the shelf life of any campaign that you do as well.
Okay, we are out of time. Boy, that one got a little deeper than I thought it would, but we are out of time on that topic. Thanks, Erica. And I'm last up on the roundtable, and the topic for discussion I'd like to throw out there to the table is the discount craze, the coupon craze right now, Groupon. I saw another one, new one, Weforia. Everybody's getting into deals and discounts. And just like everybody's opinion on it, I'm not a fan on it, mostly. I mean, unless you're a commodity business that sells on price, I think you should stay away from the discount or the coupon craze because, you know, first thing is you are conditioning people to shop or do business with you on price. So I just like everybody's opinion out there. What do you guys think about the discount craze, the coupon craze right now?
I've actually bought two coupons. One was for a restaurant 6 months ago, and I haven't visited there, and the coupon is valid for 1 year, right?
Okay.
So that was more like an impulse buy. I would never normally go to that restaurant because it's very far away from where I live. But the second buy, which was, I'll state the company, is the Washingtonian magazine. I really love it. And it came for, I saved like $10, so I registered for that. Now, the difference in both these things, like you said, are people don't buy magazines anymore. They want to read them online, but I like to read the actual physical paper. So it was a good deal for me, the second part. Now, when I think to your point, people may not be your repeat customers because they'll buy it once and they're done. And I've heard stories of people getting deluged with requests in the first couple of weeks and then going away. So it's an interesting market. I'd like to see how it pans out. But you're right. Consumer businesses will gain more from that.
Yeah, Jay, I tend to agree with you. I'm not a big fan of the coupons and the coupon craze and discounts and things like that. I'm a firm believer that really, while you want to be reasonably priced for whatever your offering is, you don't want that to be your competitive differentiator. That just spells a long, slow death for most businesses.
Yeah, I'm a little torn on it. I'm a huge fan of Groupon and Daily Direct deals that we've got for local markets. And I really think that mobile coupons and location-based advertising coupons that you may find on Foursquare are really exciting, and I actually look for them as a consumer, and I'm a little disappointed when more businesses don't take advantage of them. But again, I think it does depend on the vertical and the niche and the market that you're in. But from my opinion, I think where mobile's headed, I think that's going to be a huge opportunity for some marketers.
Well, it's definitely a trend. And from the consumer side, I can see the attraction from the consumer side, especially during a recession. You know, Yelp deals, and you mentioned Foursquare and everything like that. But I think from the business side of it, if you own a business and you start participating in these discount-oriented promotions, there's something that's called an anchor price. And if you've read Dan Ariely's book, Predictably Irrational, he talks about the anchor price in there, and that is the first price that you approach consumers with, that becomes their anchor price for your business in their mind. And from then on, they will judge all of the prices that you have by that anchor price. And if your anchor price is 25 or 50% off your normal price, from then on, consumers are going to now judge your business by saying, wow, that's 50% higher or 25% higher than what I paid before. And I think in the long run, I think, like you said, Scott, it could be a death spiral. It's a long, slow path down the discount path.
The way the internet is connected, there will always be opportunities to keep trying things and see what works. I think people to definitely try it to see, hey, does this work for me or not? We're just keeping in mind that there are pitfalls to anything that you try.
Jay, I'd offer one last thought on that real quick too. And that is the one thing I do like about discounts through online stores as a business owner is it allows me to experiment a little bit and put different discount codes out there and see who is responding and kind of track where those things are coming from a little bit more easily than if there's nothing like that. So when people put that code in, I know where they got that from and whether or not certain things are working for me. So, you know, it can be used to kind of experiment and define your market a little bit in that regard.
And maybe the way to do it is to offer discounts that don't affect your primary offering or your primary products so that you don't in any way reduce the the brand value, you know, of your primary products, and so that you can keep that separate from the discount that you're offering.
Sure, you know, free shipping would be a good example of that with a code or something like that, because that way the price of your product still stays the same.
Okay, boy, we've gone around the table quickly here. Lots of good topics today. We're up to the shameless self-promotion part of our program. We will say that if you go to the show notes of this episode at powertothesmallbusiness.com, you will see a link to each of our guests today, their presentation at Optimization Summit coming up in Dallas on September 16th and 17th. So we won't restrict our guests to talking about their session at Optimization Summit if they want to, but let's go around the table now for the shameless self-promotion part, and you guys each have a brief segment here to shamelessly self-promote yourself. We'll start with Shashi. Go ahead.
I think I'm really excited by the Network Solutions Small Business Success Index 4 that is coming out. Every 6 months, we go out and survey 500 to 1,000 small businesses to get a pulse of what they are excited about. This time, I can give you a preview of one of the results, which is going to be like, I think small businesses are struggling with marketing and innovation, which was not the case last year. So which means that the economy is hurting them so badly that they're focusing on trying to get their cash flow and everything else working and not doing so well with marketing and innovation. The other thing that I want to shamelessly brag about is the Grow Smart Business Conference in Washington, D.C. in November 5th. I'm playing a big role in organizing it, so looking forward to seeing a lot of small businesses there.
Very cool. We'll post links to that in the show notes. Scott?
Yep. My name is Scott Ellis, and The thing I would most shamelessly promote is not quite ready for release yet, but I'm working with two other field experts, one in the area of social media and one in audio video, on a pretty big online training course that is going to really target people that are anywhere from the very, very beginning through building some fairly advanced websites, integrating podcasting, social media, all that kind of stuff. So something to look for in October. I will be shamelessly promoting that on my own website, vsellis.com. And I also have to give in a plug for Open Camp. I'm one of the co-organizers of that event.
And last but certainly not least, Erica Campbell.
Our big website here is forrent.com. We help apartment seekers find their rental home search, making that effortlessly for them. And apartment property managers and owners can use us for an integrated marketing solution within the multifamily housing industry. We operate over 100 publications, such as ForRent Magazine. We're in 190 markets nationwide, and we operate four leading websites, again, such as ForRent.com. And you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/APTS4Rent, or follow us on Twitter at APTS4Rent as well, or you can follow myself on Twitter at Erica Campbell.
And my shameless self-promotion is, if you've been listening to this podcast, you know about my word-of-mouth webinar, free word-of-mouth webinar coming up September 23rd. Register for that at themarketingspot.com. Thanks to each of our guests. We will see you guys next week at Optimization Summit.
Look forward to it, Jay.
Looking forward to meeting you all there. Thanks.
Now, if you want to go to Optimization Summit, by the way, and you are hearing this podcast before September 16th, I have a discount registration link on my website, 60% off. Just go to themarketingspot.com and check in the latest news section. And I'll post all show notes for this episode of the podcast on the website, powertothesmallbusiness.com. Leave a comment, suggest a topic for the show, or review some past episodes. It's where you can also subscribe to the show by email, feed reader, or iTunes. And so when there's a new episode, it comes to you. It's magic. This internet thing is crazy, right? Hope you enjoyed the Marketers Roundtable episode. My name is Jay Arrett of The Marketing Spot. Join me next time on the internet show that's all about small business marketing. Power to the small business.
You've been listening to Power to the Small Business with Jay Arrett, the internet show exclusively about small business marketing. Please see the complete show notes at themarketingspotblog.com. You can also listen to the show online and subscribe in iTunes at powertothesmallbusiness.com. Never miss an episode of the internet show all about small business marketing. Power to the small business.
Special thanks to Mary Lynn Foster of the Big Success Podcast for creating the opening and closing voiceovers of Power to the Small Business. You can find Mary Lynn at the Big Success Show, BIGGSuccess.com.